Cowabunga, dude. You're listening to the Vela News Podcast. I'm totally tubular host Fred Dreyer. We're getting pitted on some sick cycling content this week. Yeah, dog. Hi, everyone. This is Fred Dreyer, editor-in-chief of Vela News. You are listening to the Vela News Podcast for the week of January 27th. I'm here with Spencer Paulison and Kaylee Fretz, who last week ruthlessly clowned me for apparently having some type of SoCal surfer bro accent. What was this? What was this nonsense?
SoCal? I thought you went to Santa Cruz. Isn't that NorCal?
Oh, bro, man.
Hey, man.
It's like Central Coast, dog. I've been accused of having many different accents over the years, but never a like surf bro California one. That was a new one for me.
Hey. You know, reader feedback is always valued. So
hey,
please keep us posted. On
I appreciate
your thoughts on how Fred speaks.
Exactly. First of all, I appreciate all reader feedback, especially negative listening feedback. If you have any more, please email me at spaulison@velonews.com.
Classic.
If you have a Kickstarter campaign for your new product that is going to disrupt like big derailleur or, you know, like your bottom bracket, spaulison@competitorgroup.com.
You don't even know what my email address is.
spaulison@velonews.com. Do you have great rumors about the masters racers in your areas who may be doping that you think because they beat you? Email me at spaulison@velonews.com.
All I was doing was passing along that reader email. I don't even know why I'm the one who's getting the heat for this, Fred.
I think this reader maybe was listening to the program episode. Because I'm not going to lie, I'd had a couple, we had a couple oat sodas before having that one, and maybe my English got a little more relaxed than usual. Totally tubular. Anyway, we have a fun podcast this week. We have numerous topics to get to, the first of which is that our sport's little Colombian champion, Nairo Quintana, has decided to race both the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France in 2017. And we are here to talk about what that means for Quintana, for the sport, have some takes, some opinions. Can he do the double? I don't know. In the show, we are catching up with Vela News tech editor Dan Cavallari, who's at the Shimano camp. And he has a report from some of Shimano's coolest new products. Kaylee, what are we talking about with that segment?
We're catching up with Dan in Spain to chat about the brand new Durace. Ooh. And some
Durace Di2.
Durace Di2, including it's got some disc brake stuff and it does some weird customization. You can make it shift.
Ooh.
With your mind.
Fancy. Yeah, it pairs to your Apple Watch.
Yeah, exactly. You pairs to the Apple Watch and you just poke your watch.
Sorry, Android users.
Yeah. It works
So Dan's in Calpe. We also today have one none other than Andrew Hood on the line, also from Spain, I believe, to chat about our Giro Tour double takes. Mm-hmm.
And then we finish up today with a couple fun interviews that I did at the Rally Pro Cycling Camp. We talk with current Criterium champion Brad Huffy Huff about what it means to be a crit guy in 2017. Important questions like, is rubbing actually racing?
Rubbing is racing.
You know, if you're a crit guy, at what point in your like regular civilian life do your crit guy skills accidentally come out? Mm. Like, sorry, grandma, didn't mean to throw an elbow into you at the checkout line at Safeway. Maybe I did. But let's get into it, guys. Nairo Quintana, twice a runner-up at the Tour de France, a Giro winner. He's the contender. He is Colombia's all-around man of the sport. And he is going to do both the Giro and the Tour this year. I think a lot of us thought he was just going to target the Tour. And now he's throwing his Giro into the program. And so we are here to talk between the three of us and Andy Hood about why he's doing that, what that means, and what we think that will mean for the Giro and the Tour this year. So who wants to start us off? Who has a take on this? When you found out that the Nairo man was doing both the Giro and the Tour, yeah, Hoodie, what was your thought when you heard that he was going to do both?
I thought that it just once again confirms that Nairo has got bigger cojones than just about anybody else in the peloton. I mean,
I like it.
who else has the nerve and the ambition to even try to take on this thing? I mean, Contador was the last to do it a couple of years ago. He won
2015. Yeah,
2015 won the Giro, but the caveat there is Contador had a bad crash, which a lot of people think took some of the air out of his wings when it came to the tour. But I think it reflects just really the ambition, the unbridled ambition of Nairo to even have the cojones to do this, because it's a centenary edition of the Giro. There's a lot, all the big guns are going to the Giro this year, and I think it just says a lot about Nairo's character that he's even doing this.
Ooh, that's a good take. Take number one.
Cojones take.
Spencer, do you have a take?
Yes. I say that Quintana, there's no way he's going to win both of those. Mm. And here's the deal. You either need to be doping or riding down tube shifters to win the Giro Tour double. Because if you look back in history, you got Pantani in 98, Indurain 92 and 93. I mean, never proven for Indurain, but
definitely using down tube shifters.
A little sketchy in my book.
Well, he was down tube shifters, right?
No. He was, nope. They would have been STIs.
He had STI. Yeah. So those guys, to me, fall in the first category. And then prior to that, everyone who won the Giro Tour double was riding down tube shifters.
I like it.
So thanks, Shimano. Thanks for ruining the Giro Tour double by introducing STI shifters.
We obviously don't advocate for doping to win the two, but you know, if Nairo Quintana showed up on the start line with some down tube shifters, I think that'd be pretty sweet.
He shouldn't do it.
Secret weapon.
Not
do you guys remember
shouldn't.
When Lance did that? He like replaced his front shifter with a down tube shifter because it was lighter.
Weight weenie.
Maybe that's it.
Not totally necessary.
All right, I'm coming in here with my scream and take. First of all, I think that Nairo Quintana looked at this year's Tour de France route and said, no way I'm winning this.
Ooh.
No way that we're taking down
insurance
team.
Insurance policy. This is insurance policy.
This is his insurance policy by basically saying, this route at the Tour, kind of custom built for the SkyTrain, a lot of long grinding climbs, not as many climbing days as we've seen in the past. There's that one stage where it could have some chaos, but really it's some flat time
short
trials.
Day in Po.
Yeah. And I think he saw that and said, you know what? I want to win a Grand Tour this year, and I loved winning the Giro, and I'm going to go win the Giro, and the Tour de France, we'll just see what happens.
You know, I like that theory. We had a staff member here a couple of years ago. That was his tactic in the lunch rides, the Velenus lunch rides, is he would attack extremely early so that when we caught him, he would have an excuse to just get blown right off the back. Mm. Because if you get blown off the back, you know, when the iron's in the fire, that's can be a little bit embarrassing. But if you've already attacked, you've already at least given it a shot, right?
Yeah, dude, if you already win the Giro, you can come into the Tour and you get dropped on that first mountain day or whatever.
Just eat some croissants all month.
Well, yeah, but then you could give some great quotes about like,
pastis.
Yeah, that climb was pretty tough. You know what it wasn't tougher then? The Giro, which I won.
Sandbag, the ultimate sandbag move.
A bunch of garbage takes here. I'm choosing to believe what Quintana and his coaching staff and director staff have told us, which is that if he rides the Giro, he will ride an even better Tour de France.
Mm.
And this is, I'm going to read a quick quote here.
Wait, does that Kool-Aid taste like sangria?
I'm going to read a quick quote here from Jose Luis Arrieta, who is...
So he was talking to Hoodie on this one.
So the quote is, logically, his ambition is to win the Tour and our obligation is to help him. And the Giro can be part of that. That's Arrieta. And that is basically saying that if Nairo decides to, or if Nairo rides the Giro and then rides the Tour de France, he could potentially ride better in both. And my hottest of hot takes is he's going to win both.
Whoa, man.
Be the first since Pantani in 98.
Scorcher.
Nope, definitely not.
let's get to some analysis, Hoodie. You have been reporting on this team for a long time. You know the principles. You've sat down and interviewed Quintana and his teammates on more than one occasion. What type of analysis do you have on the team itself and how strong they will be at Giro and the Tour?
Well, there's definitely a sense of frustration that Team Sky just kind of bowls them over. There's a feeling that without Froome, without Team Sky's budget, Nairo would have won two tours already. Going back to what Kelly was saying from Arrieta, that they kind of are basing part of this decision on what happened last year with Valverde. They looked at his power numbers. you know, Valverde rode to third at the Giro, I think seventh at the Tour, you know, not really bucking for the win in either race, but they saw that his power numbers were at a good level, competitive level at the Giro, and then he was even stronger at the Tour, even though at the Tour last year, he was kind of just committed to helping Nairo.
Hoodie, can we just point out real quick that Valverde is 10 years older than Nairo Quintana and also served a doping ban for Operation Puerto. So just a little context. I don't know if those are apples and oranges with their power data.
Just a little context. Good to point that out. But that's where they're coming from. It's an unconventional approach, to say the least. There was some buzz, you know, that Froome might even throw his hat into the double, but they quickly backpedaled that, saying, no way, you know, they're sticking to the plan and knowing what works. I mean, it's going out of the box. I mean, let's see if it works. Yeah. I mean, chapeau to those guys for at least trying. I think what they don't want to do, what they're saying also is they don't want to get stuck in this rut of just doing the same thing every year, banging their head against the wall, doing the same races, trying to go into the Tour. You know, they tried to, you know, waiting to the last climb 2 years ago, they couldn't do it. This year they tried to attack early, they couldn't do it. So, you know, why not? Let's see what happens. I mean, maybe you do the Giro three-quarter effort. Maybe you can actually even win it. Who knows? I think it'd be harder for Nairo to win this year's Giro with all the time trial kilometers in the race this year. But I think they're just trying to maybe mix it up. Let's see if it works.
Let's talk a little bit about the Giro itself. I mean, beyond whether he can win the Tour de France after riding the Giro, he still is going to try to win the Giro first. And it's not going to be an easy Giro to win. I mean, this is a more stacked Giro field than we've seen any time, at least in the last couple of years. We got Stephen Kruijswijk there. Aru is going to be there. Nibali is going to be there. You know, Van Garderen, Pierre Roland's going to be there. There's a whole bunch. Bauke Mollema is going to be there. There's a whole bunch of top GC guys that are going to be hitting this as their primary objective for the entire season. Can Quintana win the Giro against this field?
So before we get to that, that leads me to a little curveball take. I want to throw you guys. Got my curveball.
Fred warned us of this.
Throwing some heat. We've talked about this internally in Velo News meetings and Velo News banter, but maybe this is the year that we finally do it. Is this the year that we finally realize that we assign proper value and weight to the Grand Tours? You know,
what?
It's like, okay, the Tour de France traditionally, historically, gets all of the import and it's the most important Grand Tour. But is this, as bike fans, let me ask you.
So you're saying Giro.
Is this the year that we look at each Grand Tour's lineup of contenders, difficulty of course, and assign a level of importance to it based off of that, as opposed to the old way of thinking, which is just always Tour, Giro, Vuelta.
So you're prepared to demote the Tour.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
I'm prepared to look at this year's Giro d'Italia and its lineup and say, maybe this is the most important race of the year.
Mm. Bah.
Hoodie's
I
not
know,
into that.
Blasphemy.
Hoodie's
blasphemy.
Not into that one.
Hey, look, say, Hoodie.
As fans, look, I'm going to watch every stage of every Grand Tour, full stop. But, you know, I'm ready to maybe say Giro's number one. Giro's my number one.
Well, I agree with Fred that the Giro packs more punch. It's a more beautiful, authentic race to watch. I mean, you have Italy, you have the first Grand Tour of the season, you have the history, you have everything that goes into the Giro. But just in terms of a sporting level within the cycling, in terms of the level of competition, even this year's Giro at this top GC field is not going to be as good a shape of peloton as the Tour de France. The Tour de France is the pinnacle of the peloton every year, going back to whenever, because every guy in the Tour de France this year will be working and training for that race his entire season, and all the top guys go to the Tour de France. You can say a lot of them are going to the Giro this year for the GC guys, but you go down into that field and there's going to be a lot of new guys, a lot of young guys, a lot of Plan B guys, a lot of
like stage wins,
yeah,
stage wins, points classifications, mountain classifications.
Yeah, yeah. Where you go to the Tour, every guy on every team is at his absolute peak, and that's the big difference between the Tour and the other two Grand Tours.
Well, we have the primary contender to Froome for the last few years, basically saying, "Yeah, Tour de France, Giro." Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the crown for Premier Grand Tour just follows Froome around at this point, right? It's whatever race Froome is in. Is Quintana just avoiding the showdown? Like Spencer said earlier,
can't say that about the Vuelta last year.
Giving himself some insurance.
2016
going
Vuelta
into the Tour de France.
I wouldn't say, you know.
Well, what's more difficult, having Chris Froome beat up a bunch of tomato cans at the Tour de France this year, or watching like these A game contenders minus Chris Froome just wallop and womp on each other at the Giro d'Italia?
Mm. Well, it's definitely more fun to watch the Giro. Don't get me wrong.
But the Tour is still the Tour, and the Tour is the Tour because Froome is going to be there. That would be my argument. Yeah.
Yeah, but who's Froome? I mean, so let's say...
Who's Froome?
Well, no. Who's Froome's primary competition if, you know, Froome is going to be going against a tired and fatigued Nairo Quintana, old man Contador.
Oh, it's Bauke Mollema, obviously.
Bauke Mollema.
Bauke Mollema's going to Giro.
Well, I think Richie Porte steps up pretty fast.
Yeah, Porte.
Yeah. Richie's looking pretty good.
Porte.
And Bardet.
Yeah,
Bardet cannot be underestimated.
Bardet's too busy. He's finishing grad school. He's got night classes. Too busy doing grad school to train.
He has his degree. If
you're putting money on a Tour podium right now, I think you put Froome at the top step. And then, you as always, you have a probably a tight battle for second between, you know, between Porte, Bardet, and now Quintana. Because
Nairo should land on that podium. Tight. Really. I expect he would land on the podium even after the Giro. Quintana.
Yeah. I think Quintana is definitely on the podium. It's just a question of where. I honestly don't think that he beats Froome. I mean, you know, the long standing, there's a reason why this doesn't happen very often. There's a reason why, you know, nobody has won the Giro and the Tour in the same year since 1998, when we'll just say that the peloton
doping
was
and
in
down
a very
tubes.
Different place.
Doping and down tube shifters.
Exactly.
You know,
this notion that suddenly Movistar has discovered that doing the Giro makes you better for the Tour de France, I think is highly, highly questionable. And I think that Quintana is going to come to the Tour tired, and I think he's going to get his ass kicked by Chris Froome, which is a bummer because I really like Nairo and I want him to win the Tour someday.
Yeah, let's back up for a sec here, though. So backing up to the Giro, let's talk about the Giro now in terms of the rivals that Nairo has there.
I would rather watch Nairo Quintana duke it out on this Giro course and maybe win than to see him get third place.
Yeah,
in the Tour.
You've made that point. So what's going to happen at the Giro? To me, it's Aru and Nibali are the two real rivals. Hoodie, what's your take on how Quintana stacks up to those two guys?
Yeah, that's, you know, the Italians racing on Italian roads with Italian UCI commissaires, with Italian race owners, with Italian Peloton. We'll see. I think, yeah, Nibali, the way he pulled that race out of his hat last year, there's a certain luck that comes
out of his hat. Out of his hat hoodie.
Out of something.
Oh, are you casting aspersions on Nibali's Giro win last year?
Oh, no. It was a spectacular victory in every sense of the word. I will agree with Fred, man. I think that Giro is going to be the race to watch this year, man. For GC, it's got the best GC field of the year. Dumoulin, what a great talent. I mean, this is his first real run at the GC crown, and this Giro is perfect for him.
I don't know about Dumoulin. It doesn't. Maybe
those big TTs. You know, that could help him out.
But some of that climbing, like there's some really serious climbing in this Giro. I don't know if he can hang with the pure climbers like Aru or even Nibali for that matter.
I mean, he's gonna take 2 to 3 minutes over those guys in those time trials though. So he doesn't necessarily have to stick with them to win this Giro.
But so is Quintana the outright favorite though for this Giro, even given the fact that this is such a stacked field?
I wouldn't say he's the 5-star favorite now. I think there's a lot of kind of equal guys. Let's say, you know, Nibali, Quintana, Bauke Mollema has been impressive the last year as well. We'll see how he goes.
I mean, I think Quintana at full strength, Quintana at you know, his normal Tour strength, maybe I think would be the 5-star favorite, but he's going to come into the Giro a little bit soft. I think he has to come into the Giro a little bit soft, or else that Giro Tour double is going to be totally impossible.
And that'll be tough with the Etna stage in the first week. That's a big, big climb. You could lose a race on that stage. What is that, Hoodie? Do you know? Is that stage 5, I think, or stage 4?
Stage 4, you're right. Stage 4.
Last time they went up there, Contador took a couple minutes on everybody else in the entire field.
It's a brutal
climb. That climb is no joke.
Yeah.
Quintana, you know, last year, this adds credence to the two Grand Tours stronger than the second one. Do we think he was stronger in that Vuelta last year than he was at the Tour de France?
Hoodie was there. Let's hear it, Hoodie. What do you think?
He was stronger in the sense that if you believe the story that he was, you know, he was definitely struggling in the tour last year. He could not keep pace. I think a big difference too for last year for Froome is he didn't have his A team with him at the Vuelta, and that's kind of why he lost the Vuelta, right? Because he took so much time on Quintana in that final time trial at the Vuelta. Basically, even the time that Quintana had before he lost all that time going into Formigal, Froome probably would have won the Vuelta last year. But
yeah, I think Quintana kind of lucked into it a little.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great race, but it wasn't a pure win based on your fitness or ability, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, they had that raid at Formigal, and Froome kind of was asleep at the wheel, or his team was asleep at the wheel, and that's just that small difference and blew up the race. And that was the big difference in that race. Because I think Froome, with that time trial in his pocket, he would have won.
Does Nairo Quintana win the Giro? Anybody? Spencer?
Nope, definitely not. I think he is. I think he will win the Giro. It should be a good battle. I think he'll narrowly beat Nibali in the Giro, and then I give him third place of the tour.
Behind?
Probably Froome Port.
Yeah, I'm going victory at the Giro, fourth place, just missed the podium.
Oh, fourth. The chocolate medal.
Yeah, chocolate Ouch. Medal.
All right, Hoodie, what's your prediction?
I'll say that he won't win either one of them. Either one of them this
Ooh.
Year.
Ooh. Wait, so who's your pick for the Giro then?
I don't know. I think we're gonna see. I think we're gonna see one of the Dutchies win the Giro. Call me crazy.
No,
Kruiswijk or Dumoulin.
Yeah,
I would love to see. I would love to see Tom Dumoulin win the Giro. I mean, just like from a very selfish standpoint.
He's
Tom
a handsome
is one of the
man.
Best interviews in the entire sport.
He's a handsome man.
He's awesome.
Yes.
For the handsome scale, he deserves to win the Giro.
Okay. Well, we all will be watching. This is one of the big storylines. Next big storyline, we have to talk about some tech, right, Kaylee?
Yes, we are going to join Dan Cavallari all the way from Calpe, Spain, where he is currently testing the brand new Shimano Durace components. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing well.
How is it over there in Calpe?
It's the weather cleared up. It's much better than it was last week, so we had some good riding.
Awesome. Well, okay, so you're checking out the brand new Durace. This is stuff that we've seen sort of floating around for almost a year now, actually, but now it is going to be officially released. You mentioned to me previously that there are a couple sort of very exciting changes to this group. Can you run through those for me real quick?
Yeah, so obviously one of the big stories is the power meter, but the other thing about this is sort of these little refinement touches. The shifting experience is going to be very different for people if they want it to be. So, for example, you know, Shimano has added customization options where you can essentially use their eTubes app, which was previously only available on a PC platform. Now it's on a tablet, and most importantly now it's also a phone app. So consumers who buy this can actually download this phone app and customize the way their shifters work.
And just to be clear here, we're talking about DI2. This is the electronic shifting platform.
Correct. Yes.
And is that a connection via Bluetooth? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's everything's Ant Plus and Bluetooth, and there's also wireless options. So it's very easy to communicate now with the system. And once you get into the customization platform on the eTubes, you can do things like do what they call a semi synchro shift, which essentially means if you shift your front derailleur, the rear derailleur will automatically shift to compensate and keep your cadence consistent. But they take it a step further. You can actually customize even that synchro shift. So if you don't want it to shift two gears to compensate, you just want it to shift one gear to compensate.
So this is the synchro shift that was brought on with XTR, where you like just shift the rear derailleur and the front goes automatically?
Correct. It's a similar process. So they brought that refinement to the roadside. It's totally customizable, and you can set two different customization options. So if, say you wanted to load that into your DI2 system and change it mid-ride, it's just a matter of using the junction box button to scroll through, essentially. Pretty nifty, pretty easy to change on the fly.
It seems more like a set it and forget it thing, though, right, Dan? I can't imagine you'd want to like change your shift button functions in the middle of a ride, right?
Probably not, but you could also change it, preload them essentially, so that say one day I'm going to spend it in the mountains and I'm climbing. I can have one shift profile for that. And then the next day I'm going to be sprinting on flats. I can basically, without having to, you know, fire up my app or my eTubes platform, basically just scroll through on the junction box and set it, and it's ready to go.
Hot take, Dan. I am never going to do that.
that sounds like it's a little ridiculous. Yeah.
However, I do like the idea of being able to just like Spencer said, like set it and forget it. You know, you figure out what works for you, works for your riding style, and you pretty much just leave it there. Okay. I should say, first of all, that more information on the new Durace from Dan is going to be on VeloNews.com, or is already on VeloNews.com. Dan, the next thing we want to talk about was the new power meter, which is, again, something that we've seen floating around for quite a while. You have now actually used it, I think.
Yes.
Does it seem to work? Do you like it?
It seems to work. I've got about 100 miles on it here in the mountains, and in terms of the power numbers that I'm getting, it seems pretty similar to what I've gotten from other power meters.
So really low, right?
Really low, like yeah. in the low 40s.
Double digits.
Soft pedaling. The great thing about the power meter is, what I think anyway is a great thing, is that it's totally integrated into the Shimano system. So if you like, you know, Dura Ace, Shimano, and that's what the name you trust, that's the name you like, now Shimano has their own proprietary system. But what's even cooler about it is that everything is sort of self-contained. So the left side and the right side are hardwired. The battery is in the spindle, and then the two sensors are hardwired into that battery. So you get what they're calling very accurate information. I can't speak to the accuracy at this point. I haven't gotten that deep into it.
How do you charge that battery? How do you charge that battery, Dan?
Yeah, so that's another nifty little piece. There's basically a magnetic charger that's going to come with the power meter.
Whoa, and when magnets. It comes,
yep, and it just hooks right up to the power meter. It's quick and easy. Shimano says you're supposed to get about 300 hours out of a charge. So, you know, in terms of battery life, that's pretty good.
Yeah, like two seasons actually, worth for us.
Yeah, that's really good. But it seems to be a pretty nifty system. So one catch is that in order to install the non-drive crank, you do need a new tool. It's included with the crank set. It's similar to the old plastic tool you used to use to attach non-drive cranks. It's the same kind of idea. It's just a different shape and size.
Why? Why would they do that? That's just really annoying.
It is kind of annoying. The reason is because in that slot where you would normally slot that old tool into, you know, where it interfaces with the spindle, there is now an electronic connection. So you have to kind of work around that.
So Dan, what's your overall takeaway on this group? Is this something that people should be lining up at the bike shops to go get? Is it kind of more of a incremental improvement that maybe is worth it? Do you like the group overall?
I do like the group overall, and it is, if you're used to DI2 shifting, you know what you're going to get. It's in terms of shifting performance, there's not much of a change. It's very smooth. It's very positive. It's everything we've come to expect from DI2. The beauty of the upgrade, the new system, is that there's small refinements. There's a lot of new features that I'm going to outline in my first ride review. If those seem appealing to you, I think it's worth it. Will it blow your mind if you're already a DI2 user? Maybe not. But I think, you know, if you're into the newest, if you want total integration, if you want the automation to be able to program your shifting, it's certainly worth it. Everybody else, you know, maybe take a wait and see, give it a test ride and see if you like it first. But in terms of shifting performance, very, very similar to older DI2 versions. It does have a sleeker look, and the hoods have a sleeker feel. But beyond that, it is pretty similar.
Good stuff. Thank you, Dan. Dan's first ride review of the brand new Durace, including the crazy looking new disc version, is on VeloNews.com.
OK,
Okay, you are tuning into the Villainous Podcast, and we're very, very pleased to be joined by, oh my gosh, it's Brad Huff, National Criterium Champion. We've been talking about what it means to be a crit guy in 2017, because the crit guy, I feel like kind of a dying breed. There were years in which every other guy in the North American cycling scene was a crit guy, and now there's but a few of you left. So Brad, I appreciate you joining us today, and here's a question for you.
Go.
As a crit guy, what are the acceptable excuses for when your teammates drop you on a climb in a training ride? Like, what do you tell them?
Oh, I'm just saving it for the sprint. Mm. You know, I don't want to mess up my sprint workout later. You know, don't want to make you guys look bad if I do the real sprint, you know, now to stay with you.
Okay.
Various things like that.
How about this? As a crit guy, you're used to throwing elbows into people in the final sprint. What are some areas of just like regular life where you find yourself throwing elbows into people? Like when you're in line at the bank or at the DMV? Do you ever do that?
You know, I usually don't do the bank or the DMV because you're typically going to have someone that's doing a concealed carry, you know, signing their license. And they want to show it off at the DMV. So you don't want to bump into them too aggressively. You want to stick to areas which you can control. You can almost put your thumb on, you know, grocery store.
Okay.
You know, grandma doesn't know it's coming. You know, you just boom, you're right in there. You get your bananas. You get your kefir. She doesn't even know what kefir means. And you've already hot routed her into the front of the line.
Here's a question. As a crit guy, you're used to making pretty dangerous, sketchy moves while in cycling traffic. Do you find yourself doing the same thing when you're driving in actual car traffic?
Actually, no. You know, I'm very calculated. Everyone should try to race a bicycle every once in a while to realize how to be a better driver. But they do come in handy when you have to make evasive maneuvers to save your life.
You're the crit national champion. You get to win the wear the Stars and Stripes jersey for
because I won.
Because you won.
Yeah.
For the entire year. Here's a question for you. Having the crit national champion jersey allows you to get a free X at place Y. Like, what do you get for free with that jersey?
I would have to say the Sound Pony in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Uh-huh. I mean, you wear it in there, you're known. You're VIP, you know? You go to the back room.
Will you be able to get like a free beer or a free drink?
Probably a PBR. Okay. You know? Let's not go top shelf. Let's just keep it amongst the crit riders, you know, because we can't afford too much, you know? So let's just do a PBR. Tall boy.
Where are areas in life outside of cycling where you think it's still socially acceptable to wear your Stars and Stripes jersey?
To bed, you know, and Sunday school, make sure to let it be known. But the most equivalent or the most appropriate form, place to wear it, I can't speak right now, would be a Trump rally, you know. You have to show your support for America, and how to do that better than showing that you're a true American Criterium bike racer.
Who were your crit heroes from back in the day, from when you first started racing?
Back in the day when crits were cool. You know, man, it's hard.
Who were your crit mentors? We'll start that place.
You know, I really didn't have any mentors. There was a guy in St. Louis, Missouri, and his name is Joe Hill. And he is stronger than any other crit rider in America today and in the past. It's just that he chose to follow normal life. Mm-hmm. That guy was definitely one of my heroes. I learned a lot from him. He was my competitor. He was my arch enemy, but we were good friends. It was invaluable to do races with him. You know, because I was on the local scene for several years. I didn't really go to the big boy leagues for quite a while. Jonas Carney, definitely, you know, in his last year as a pro is when I just started stepping into the national scene and, like, attempting to go to the races and survive. So definitely Jonas. That would be the only two.
So that's, like, mid-2000s. So we're talking, like, Gord Frazier's still racing.
Oh, yeah.
Ivan Dominguez is still racing.
Right.
Hilton Clark. Mm-hmm. Carl Menzies, like these are some big dogs of the crit scene. How would you describe what your typical like national level crit was like during those days?
Well, my first actual US Pro crit that I did my first year, I was actually heckling Gord Frazier because back then they used to allow foreigners in the races. And so I specifically remember heckling Gord because it was his last year. And I won the jersey that day. And then a rider that you stated, Hilton Clark, actually won the race. But then I feel like I got it back from him because he got his green card this past year. And so he got to race US Pro crit. And then I won and he didn't. So I felt like I got the jersey back, even though he, you know, had it, you know, in the real. So it was a good one.
Rubin, is it racing?
Not so much. Not so much. You don't want to, you know, there's a lot of videos out there and from various areas in the United States. I won't specifically say SoCal, but I'll just say areas that think Rubin's a little bit of the racing style. No, it's not. Sometimes, you know, you need to let your place be known and to be respectful of other riders or make them respect you. But I prefer to just do it with the pedals and take a little bit of a hot route.
So it used to be in some of these big national crits, you'd see entire teams like 5-6 guys rolling up. Now it seems like, you know, some of these teams are sending 2-4 guys. In your typical national level crit, how confident, how many guys do you need as team? How many guys do you need as teammates to feel confident that you're going to bring home the goods?
Well, always a full team is always better. You know, having a stronger lead out team to be able to be competitive with United Healthcare because they have put their stamp on it for the last, you know, like 5 years that they've been dominant. So, you know, you definitely need a full team. But if you can have some salty dogs that 2 or 3 of you out there, you can really get the job done in the end. But it's going to be difficult to really overtake the UHC train like everyone's realized.
What about some of these like regional Cat 1 crit bros? I mean, there still seems like there's a culture of crit racing in some regions across the States. What can you say about the strength of some of these regional teams?
They're strong. They're very strong. Actually, former crit champion, two-time crit champion Eric Young and Tom Soliday and I went on out to the East Coast to do some races, and we got lapped. I mean, we were dropped in 15 minutes, and it was kind of jaw-dropping at the ability of the riders. And you know, no matter where you go in the United States, they're going to be strong. They're going to be competitive, and you're definitely going to have to show up with your A game.
So as a crit guy, you end up winning a lot of races. I'm curious, do you ever practice victory salutes? Do you have a favorite victory salute? Like, what do you do when you win, and how did you come to that?
I actually don't win that much. I actually don't race crits that much. So if I happen to win, it's more of a surprise. Mm. But definitely over experience, over the years, I've learned to not celebrate until it's guaranteed. In fact, this last year, one of the few races I did was Mayor's Cup at the end of the year. And I celebrated almost a little too early, but I still got it by half a bike.
So take me through the last couple hundred meters of Crit Nationals last year. What was going on and how were you able to come out with a big W?
You know, it was definitely, everyone was red line. We were full gas behind the UHC lead out train. My team had done an amazing job to get me up into the top 10. I was there with Travis McCabe, multi-time crit champion Daniel Holloway. The whole UHC lead out train was in front of me. And I just made sure to not hesitate any bit. And I noticed one of their riders was losing the wheel a little bit. And so in a blink, I went around him. And that is what enabled me to be in the position to position for that last turn, which I was still, I think I was third wheel going into that last turn. And just because I kind of lined up the turn a little bit better, I was able to take a tighter line. And I was really surprised that I came around John Murphy because, I mean, he is a two-time crit champ. He is one of the most winningest crit riders or road riders that are out there today. He has vast amount of experience. He's very powerful. And it was all because of the hot route line that I was able to, one, keep it up, and two, be able to pedal a couple pedal strokes before him, which gave me that acceleration just to be in front of him by just a little bit. And I was just thankful to be able to be able to perform that way, you know. But that was years of experience, which got me to that point. You know, it wasn't that I was had good legs on the day, so I could pedal that way. It was I was pulling from 10, 11 years plus of crit racing off and on to be able to maneuver myself and position myself for that. A lot of people think just because I do sprint intervals, I'm going to be able to beat X rider. Well, that is very wrong. You got to be able to survive tactically before you can even think about trying to be throwing down some watts.
Huff, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Muchas gracias.
The wonderful world of domestic racing. I loved hearing from those guys. You know, talking to Huff about crit racing brought back some terrible crit memories from my own experiences because I'm a Fred. I fret it up in crits all the time.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
So I figured for today's last segment, we could go around and talk about some of our favorite or least favorite crit memories. Because, you know, the crit guy, I feel like, is a dying breed. And all of us have been crit guys at one point or another. So, best crit guy story. All right, I'll go first. Crit guy story. It's my first crit.
This really is good.
Junior year, UC Santa Cruz. It was at the UC Santa Cruz College Criterium, which had a hill, a descent, and then a sharp turn. Mm. And I was starting this sport having done triathlons and been a swimmer.
Ooh,
so yeah,
it's confession time.
Pretty shaky
real confession
there.
You're forgiven.
So I remember going through that tight turn at the bottom of the hill on lap one, and my pedal grazed the ground
because smashed into the ground.
No, it grazed, and I was like, oh, what's that all about? And then I went through the second time, grazed the ground again, because this is before I knew that you had to stop pedaling through tight turns. Lap three, disaster. Full strike, just the heaviest, hardest pedal strike ever. Flew over the bars, landed on my chin and arms and hand. My bike was all mangled, but I didn't have the presence of mind to stop. I got back on my bike. I was like, oh, this is transition area too. And started chasing to get back on. And at a certain point, looked down and noticed that my top tube and stem was just covered in blood, and I was gushing blood out of my chin. And someone, some spectator, was like, stop, man, stop, you gotta stop. You need medical attention.
I'm glad you're okay, Fred.
Yep.
Wait, who said I'm okay? And I was never the same. And I started talking like a surf bro after
that. Explains a lot of things.
Sorry.
I don't have anything anywhere near that good.
Really?
I just don't.
No. Well, I had one pretty notable crash in the limited number of crits that I subjected myself to. It was the Bannock Street crit in Denver here. Mm-hmm. And last lap, Cat 3, just one of those Cat 3 moments where everyone's fighting for a corner at the bottom of a downhill and some guy just balls it up. I managed to avoid him, which I thought was pretty solid. I was sliding sideways, but kind of pulled out of it last minute. I was pretty proud of myself. And then I was like, all right, sweet. There's only two guys up the road. Got a shot at this. Come into the next corner. My rear tire totally blows because I had skidded into to try and avoid the guy and skidded all the way through the tread, all the way down to the tube. And it just blew. And I slid on my ass, got a nice, nice road rash all the way up the backs of my thighs and on my ass, and did not finish. Ooh. Even though it was the last lap and I was literally 200 meters from, ooh, from the end.
Ass road rash.
I was sledding. It was pavement sledding.
Yeah. That's a good crit guy move.
Yeah.
You're not a crit guy unless you have some cool road rash scars on your butt cheeks and hips.
Yeah,
I got tons of those. I actually have scars on the front of both of my hips because I was so skinny back when I was racing that I would fly over the handlebars and take all the skin off my hip bones.
Man, what happened? Superman. What happened to you?
Yeah, you're such a fatty now.
I'm just blossomed. I honestly have plenty of crash stories. I think I probably crashed 15 times in crits throughout the many years that I was racing crits.
That'll be our sister podcast, Kaylee's Crash Stories.
Mm. Yep, Kaylee's Crash Stories. Yeah, we could just do a whole episode. One time I didn't crash, and I was at Tulsa Tough, and I ended up in a breakaway with Floyd Landis. And this is 2010, maybe? It's Ouch Pro Cycling, post Tour de France, post band. Floyd Landis.
Did you try to get him to drink 72 cappuccinos in the program?
No, I didn't do that. I did not have the wherewithal to do that. But I will say that Floydland is a very strong bike rider. Not really a great crit racer. He was really not very good in our little breakaway.
Well, maybe you could use it to score a 10% discount at Floyd's of Leadville on some sort of marijuana related product.
Hey, Floyd, remember me? It's that guy from that crit breakaway
he'll
that
totally
one time.
Remember.
2010.
I'm sure he'll remember.
Oh, you totally remember
Could
me.
Could I get some hash oil?
100%. Yeah, yeah.
I think I was... White lightning strain of marijuana product?
That's my worst crit story.
No, that's a good crit story.
Nah, it's pretty bad.
Hey, at least you didn't end up with blood all over your bicycle.
No, I did that many times.
I didn't clean the bike for a while because I thought it was cool. Like so punk.
I raced for half a season with a cracked top tube when I was in college because I couldn't afford to replace my frame. Ooh. Carbon bike, cracked top tube. Ooh. Yeah, just, you know.
Yeah.
I figured I would see it split and I would just like jump off or something.
Oh. Don't try this at home, people.
Don't try this at home.
At some point, we will have a follow-up pod called The Totally Ghetto Things That Spencer... Kaylee and Fred did in college racing.
Oh, yes.
I wore the same pair of shorts a lot. Yeah. Okay, well, we would love your feedback on what we talked about today. You can email us at webletters@competitorgroup.com. We'll also post links to the stories we talked about today on velonews.com. Subscribe to the Velonews podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. And while you're there, please leave us a comment and a rating, especially if you liked it. I mean, I guess if you didn't like it, you can just write Spencer an email talking about how I'm just the biggest surf bro.
Or just always do 5-star ratings, and then you can hate on us in the comment on the rating.
We just want the rating.
Yeah, just get that 5 stars, you know?
Seriously, become a fan of VeloNews on Facebook at facebook.com/VeloNewsMagazine and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/VeloNews. The VeloNews show is produced by VeloNews, which is owned by the Competitor Group. The thoughts and opinions expressed on the VeloNews podcast are those of the individual. And as always, we leave you this week with the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout playing the Bernard Hurdy Classic Soul Drums.